You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Plus minus.
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there.
I didn't remember what you said.
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
plus
respected.
Minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome to a new episode of Warriors Plus Minus with the gang all here. Tim Kawakami, Ethan Strauss, Anthony Slater, and we here are striving for mediocrity. Yes, we win some and we lose some and we usually alternate. Isn't that how it goes, Anthony Slater?
I actually think that the...
We're better than mediocre, and now's the time to prove it. Is that what you're saying?
Clobber the bad podcasts, and we lose to the good ones.
Yeah, I think probably.
That's fair statement.
I think the Warriors have a chance to break this trend. I think it's partly the schedule.
Well, they're not. Yeah, they're not playing.
They're playing the East. Which, by the way, I mean, I know I put this stat out last night. Only three teams in the East are over 500.
Yo, that was insane to read that. I literally went to the standings to make sure.
That's like a Rubik's Cube math problem riddle that can even happen.
I have Warriors fans who are like, oh, they're worried about the Warriors not getting that top 20 protection. I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like in the 11th place in the West. Wait a minute. Yeah, 11th place in the West is like 13th overall. It's bizarre. It is bizarre.
If they get their goal, which is like maybe 5-6 seed, and the East is what it looks like it's going to be, they might not protect that pick. You know, they might have the 9th. Best record, even though they're the 5th, 6th. And it's just, you know, the conference imbalance. I think the West is overrated this year. I've voiced that. I know Marcus has voiced that. And I still maintain that the meat of the West is not what it was. But the conference imbalance doesn't really seem to be changing. I mean, the Indiana Pacers are the 4 seed at 14-14. It honestly does give a little perspective that, like, as 500 and average as the Warriors have felt, everyone in the league besides just a small handful of teams really is.
It's jumbled. I think it has something to do with what this season is like and how hard it is to have any kind of continuity. So you got to maintain some perspective that as frustrating as the season has been, I think especially for Warriors fans who are used to caviar and filet mignon of the last half decade before, you know, the tanking season, quite frankly, you do need to step back and you do need to have some perspective and go, I don't think they're out of expectations range. At the same time, I would say that game on Saturday, very disappointing. That was a very disappointing outcome. It seemed like that was their chance to maybe make some noise, announce themselves as a legit playoff team, get some momentum. And it was before a big audience, would have been a lot bigger if the game added up to something. And it just felt like, nope, the Warriors are in purgatory. And that's how they're going to be for a while.
Brooklyn's a bad matchup for them, maybe the worst, you know, because particularly lately, because they've been using the small to beat the big, and Brooklyn isn't big, and Steve Nash and Kevin Durant, as bad as that Brooklyn defense will be in some matchups, they kind of knew a lot of the Warriors sets, right? The stuff they just killed Cleveland on last night, Brooklyn just kind of blew it up. I mean, it's why Steph didn't really get going like he has. Look, they're not among that elite. You could line them up against Brooklyn, the Lakers, if the Lakers actually care that night, the Clippers, if they care that night, all
Utah.
Those teams. Yeah, Utah. Oh, yes, Utah. And they're not as good. We've definitely learned that early in the season. But the thing is, that group is small. They're not a title contender. We know that. If you told me that they gained enough of a rhythm and, you know, somehow got the 5th seed in the West, I wouldn't be stunned at this point.
One thing we're learning is that they really are a good measuring stick. It doesn't really help the Warriors, but it does help the way to look at the league. And I'm looking at this Miami game coming up. It's like, you know, Miami struggled. We know that they were a finals team in the bubble. They should be better than their record. Things haven't come around. They've had some issues. Clearly, Jimmy Butler in and out of the lineup. But if the Warriors get slaughtered by them, Miami's probably pretty good. If the Warriors beat them, I'm going to say Miami's not very good. It's just such a clean line, I think, with these guys. And I haven't done the record yet, but I've said they're good against bad. They're bad against good. And it's kind of played out. And they're really bad. They cannot stay on the court with the Brooklyn Nets. They cannot do it. There's not a lot of teams can't. But if you're looking at the Warriors as a top 10 team, which is still hard for me to imagine in the terminology that we normally tend, I don't feel like they're a top 10 team because they do get blown out by these teams. We're not seeing them in their blow for blow against Utah, against, you know, the great teams. They do have the wins over the Lakers and the Clippers, but those are kind of to the side. Against the really good teams, and maybe Miami is going to be one of those, they're not on the same court. And we'll see tomorrow. We'll see Wednesday. Let's just say that, and just to give it a timeline here. And if they can stay on the court with a struggling Miami team, then maybe they go up a little bit in our minds, and maybe they can be a top 10 team, which would have Warriors fans a little worried because they might lose that pick. It is hilarious the way this line that they're treading with these draft picks and with the way they're playing and with Steph playing the way he is and the second unit sometimes not. This is really the interesting kind of weaving line that we have not experienced watching the Warriors in a long time.
Let me propose an idea. Have we all been premature by saying they aren't a title contender?
Whoa.
First off, we're looking at... No, listen.
Now, this is a take. Here we go.
Like, we don't know what the playoff scenario would be. They're about to host a team in Miami who basically got hot at the right time. And you just don't know what could happen with COVID protocols, with no fans. Is it ridiculous to say that if this team gets in the playoffs, they could make a run, since there is only like four or five teams better than them? They don't have to play all of them in the playoffs. They just need to get hot and beat a couple teams that they can beat and hopefully knock off one of them teams, and they're in the West Finals or the NBA Finals.
But the thing is, the Heat had guys who could get hot. This is like lighting a wet cigar. I mean, how is it going to happen? Who's going to get rolling? You know what I mean?
Michael Mulder is going to be turning into Duncan Robinson. Come on now.
You didn't know Duncan Robinson was Duncan Robinson until he was Duncan Robinson, though. You didn't know Tyler Herro was Tyler Herro until he became Tyler Herro.
Justinian Jessup says Duncan Robinson is his model, so maybe they got to... Maybe Jessup is the answer to what you're saying, Marcus. We're talking about...
I also don't think the Heat blew up because of offense either. They were incredible defensively. I'm just saying, look, I'm part of it too. Like, yo, they're one round and out. Like, what's the point? When we're literally watching a mediocre league, that why can't they go on a run? I'm just saying, are we just writing it off too prematurely when we're watching these other teams really look vulnerable?
I like this take.
I'm going to give MT a lot on this. You look at the other teams and you go, okay, there's not a lot out there. But I also see, like, Boston has got, you know, Boston has this incredible amount of talent. And at some point, that talent's going to show up. MT, I think I don't think the Warriors are going to beat Utah four times in a seven-game series. That's not happening.
No.
So, like, there's some hard stops I'm going to take on some of this. But I'll just go this way. I mean, Steph's having an incredible season. But who's the Warriors' fourth best player? Who's the Warriors' fourth best player?
Woo!
Kelly Oubre.
I'm going to match that up with almost every other team in the NBA. In the top team, the NBA, say Warriors, like, they're going to have trouble with that.
Justinian and Jessup.
The depth is just not there.
But who are the teams they can't beat?
Okay, I'll tell you right now in a seven-game series.
Utah.
Yeah, potentially without Anthony Davis,
It's a question.
But to be fair to Marcus's point.
That's the part of this year.
They can suffer injuries too and have. I mean, you know, that's all part of it for them.
Okay, all right. Well, teams that at this point I would say they can't be in the playoffs. Lakers, Clippers, Jazz. You know, Nuggets are teetering on that line. They don't look that great lately, so we will not put them in that group, we'll say for now. Sixers, Nets, I think we've
seen. East don't matter. If they get to the finals, they've won. If they make the finals, none of those teams matter because they'd have to make the finals.
You're saying Miami Heat. You're saying Miami Heat.
Yes, and absolutely. How could they be the Miami Heat?
It's funny. I'm against Marcus's take in that I just don't think they're good enough, but I also don't necessarily think that any of these teams are unbeatable other than Utah. And just
it's more an indictment on everybody else than it is.
Like, yeah. If the Lakers are healthy, of course, they have no shot. But we're already seeing this issue play out with Anthony Davis, and we don't know. And if they don't have Anthony Davis, then, man, who knows? The Clippers, how much do I believe in the Clippers? I don't know, right? So I see where Marcus is coming from.
We know you don't believe in the Clippers.
I see where Marcus is coming from. I don't think baseline one guy, trying to have one guy effectively win these playoff series, it's a lot to ask. I already think that they're risking a lot by how much they put on Steph. I'll put it this way, to sort of put a capper on what Marcus is saying. I think they need to make a move to do it. I think they need to make a trade in order to get to that puncher's chance.
Well, that's kind of my point. Like, do they write off a move? You know what I'm saying? Are you like, nah, we're just developing.
I don't think they write off.
What are we talking about the move, Ethan? What's the move?
Probably have to trade that Minnesota pick, I think. Now, I haven't, that's the thing. I have not gone through it. I mean, that's the question. The hard needle to thread.
Going at Jared Jack.
Yeah.
I think that is the spot that they could make the most improvement is an initiator on the second unit and someone who can play with Steph when Steph comes back in. But
Jordan Poole, 32 in the G.
I told you about Jordan Poole.
That is the improvement. Now, how much of an improvement is it really? But it would really, you know, it would add depth to what they have. It would add depth to the rotation. I don't think it puts them in any kind of challenging place for the Utah Jazz. But, yeah, if they make a big upgrade there, and I'm not saying that Jared Jack couldn't be it. I'm just saying if they do, then I am going to start to have some of this conversation make more sense to me. At the moment, what would it take for them to beat the Utah Jazz, really? I mean, Steph going for 46 a game, that's tough to say. Also, when they have a starting lineup where three-fifths of them, their fans wince every time they take a shot. Three-fifths of them. They have two players, Steph Curry and Andrew Wiggins. And Wiggins isn't a sure thing either. So yeah,
he's wince-worthy lately.
Yeah. Basically, 21 out of their five starting players do fans want to shoot. And I think Steve Kerr might agree with that. It's a tough way to go when you're a really good team. It's a kind of amazing they've played this well with that starting lineup. Now, it's a makeshift starting lineup, no question. We'll see what they do when the centers come back. I have a feeling they're not going to play him a ton, but they will play centers. But basically, you have Draymond Green, Kelly Oubre, Juan Toscano-Anderson, and mostly Andrew Wiggins, who fans and maybe the coaching staff don't really want to see shoot that much. That's a tough place to be to be a really good team.
This is a soft part of the schedule,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Oh, no. I think they're going to pile up some wins, and people are going to start talking about this.
It was like what they've just done. I mean, like the Spurs. The Spurs actually have a pretty good record. I just don't think they're that good. Magic, obviously very winnable. Cavs.
I was joking about Jessup, but maybe call him up, man. Like, maybe see. Like, I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea if he's going to be any good or not. But maybe, I mean, this is the need. It's shooting. He can handle.
Ethan's just thinking about stories. He's thinking about stories here.
Let him explore himself in Australia, finish out that contract, see him in summer league, like play the long game with Jessup. There are upgrades that I could see that will be on the trade market this year. George Hill is a name that just screams at me as like you talk about a backup point guard who can shoot, spread the floor, can defend some. But the problem is like he's a salary slot that you'd almost have to lose Oubre for maybe. And you would have to put an asset in. And I just don't think they're in the year. Unless they're getting somebody that we're talking about, like helping them in the next 5 years win a title, I don't think they should be spending the Minnesota asset to get a win now help for this season only.
That's why the Oubre for Lonzo, whatever that was, that made sense because that's a guy who could help now and maybe into the future. Now you'd lose something defensively, and Oubre is a tough guy. I mean, I respect the stuff that he does other than shooting, and his shooting has certainly been better. But I think, just somebody who could play with that second unit.
I'm in favor of trading Oubre just because I don't think Oubre and Wiggins works long term. I just don't think that's going to be something that they can do. I don't think that's the road
you
to
mean
success.
As teammates, like they could never be on the same team together because Oubre will not be playing with Wiggins when Klay comes back.
Well, yeah, I know. What are you talking about in terms of? Like I was about to say on the team, I don't think that's something that will work. I don't think that gets Klay what he needs. I think you can't really go Wiggins, Oubre, Klay.
But why would you? That's what I'm saying. Like Kelly goes to the bench when Klay comes back. Like they're not all three going to be in starting lineup.
I just think they have other needs.
He'd be fine as a bench piece, compared to nothing. And if he walks in unrestricted free agency, it's nothing. And the thing is, he's probably going to get a decent amount of money because there's a lot of cap space out there. He does some appealing stuff to think that he'll at least get double-digit million a year for a few-year contract. Would the Warriors want to match that? Would Oubre even want to say he's unrestricted? He can just leave if he doesn't think he fits the system. The appeal of Ball was you have his restricted free agency rights, so you can, if it does work, you can always decide to match. You control that. you know, to me, the only way you put Minnesota pick on the table is if a Beal-type situation formulates, and it hasn't. Washington continues to say they're not trading him. We've had the conversation on if it would even be worth it to give it all up for him. But that, to me, is the only time it even becomes a conversation, if we are talking about a player that is a clear perennial all-star.
It's got to be something that says, okay, the Warriors are a title contender now. And that, yeah, Beal is it, and it's going to take more than the Minnesota pick. I mean, people start screaming when I say it's Wiseman in the pick, and I wouldn't do it. We haven't talked about Wiseman for a while because he hasn't played for a while, but he's still part of this. He's like getting him back in there at some point and figuring out where he fits with Steph and Draymond, not with Steph and Draymond, is a part of this, and we don't know. And that wasn't that what we were saying at the beginning of the season? If Wiseman is really good at the end of the season, then the Warriors are really an interest. If they can get to the playoffs with Wiseman on an upswing, then let's see what happens in the playoffs. That's an X factor. I don't know. And then what that will tell you about the next season's even larger. So I think they need that other guy that everyone doesn't, you know, wince when he shoots the ball or even when he has the ball in his hands. And they've got too many of those guys right now. I mean, Bazemore is like their third best offensive player right now. And I'm not ripping Bazemore. He's been good. It's just this spot they're in where they have one incredible player that defenses sometimes can't figure out what to do against. Sometimes they can. And that tilts the floor for them against bad teams. I don't think that's going to work in a playoff series or against a good team or even on a good team on a night. Let's see if Steph blows up Miami, because we know how well coached they are. We know they have athletes. Then maybe the discussion changes. But it's tough for me to see that this lineup, this offensive, you know, unbalance, which is really fun to watch, I'm not saying it isn't, can get them three rounds in the playoffs. That's really hard to see that.
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
I've been trying to eat in more often lately, so I signed up for Home Chef. I've had a few packages come in, and being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over all the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, even for someone like me who isn't making it onto Top Chef anytime soon. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what you're making ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners 18 free meals, plus free shipping on your first box, and free dessert for life at homechef.com/plus. That's homechef.com/plus for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Homechef.com/plus. Must be an active subscriber to receive the free dessert.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Ethan, you were saying you don't think Oubre is long-term. Like, explain that. I wanted to hear your explanation.
I think it's too many guys who need the ball. And also, he doesn't really fit with how the offense runs. He's shooting a lot better, which I think makes him easier to potentially trade. But he's never really gotten it. He's never really shared the ball in the way that this offense needs.
He's starting to back cut a little bit, which is like, hey, somebody taught him the back cut there. Or he's watching JTA do it. Like, I think that is helping. Like, wait a minute, this guy is getting all these dunks. I can do the same thing when Steph comes and screens for me.
Maybe that is the argument for having Oubre longer term, is he's going to absorb more of that. But I don't think that's going to be a great fit. I do think decision time is coming on Oubre, and it makes sense to me because I don't think that that's your best pathway. I think you have other needs to address. I think if you could get something for Oubre because he's been playing better and shooting better, it wouldn't be the worst idea right now. That's my position.
Again, a lot of what's out there and like the Warriors need to do this is like there's an unawareness of what's actually available to them. You know, I'm not sure what Oubre would fetch. If I'm New Orleans, particularly the way that Lonzo's been playing lately, I wouldn't trade Lonzo Ball in his restricted free agency.
I wouldn't have done it before Oubre. He was playing like this. I didn't quite get that.
And then if I'm the Warriors, I'm not adding a pick to Oubre because it's just they just shouldn't sacrifice any more future assets this season. To be honest, I just don't think there's a big move to be made this season. I think save the bullets, save the patience for the summer when a lot more bigger roster moves a lot of time are made, not more like panic ones in the season. There's much more flexibility to make different moves, particularly around draft time. The argument is cash out on the Minnesota pick while it looks appealing because maybe the Wolves protect it or maybe they go on a run and it becomes the 11th pick. But also, you know, what if you do go to lottery night and you do thread that needle and then you do have the 4th or 5th pick? Then you really potentially have something to offer. Hey, here, do you want Jalen Suggs instead of just like this?
She's obscure Minnesota pick. We've talked about having these two picks. There's a chance they get no picks in this first round. That would be something. I don't think Warriors fans want to hear that. But if again, I'm hearing all about this top 20 protection and I've wiped it off. And then I went back and did the math and went, whoa, there is a chance the Warriors are not a lot over 500, finish even 6th in the West, and that pick is not protected. It has to be delivered to Oklahoma City.
One thing about that pick, if they do protect it, they owe Minnesota's 2nd rounder. And if they don't protect it, so if it goes, let's say this scenario plays out, they would have had the 21st pick. They have to give it to the Thunder. They then retain Minnesota's 2nd rounder, which, you know, probably be like 34 or something. I mean, like, you obviously would prefer 21, 22 over 34, but that allows them to keep a very valuable 2nd round pick, a very early 2nd round pick.
Warriors fans sometimes are onto stuff, and they were onto this before I was. The Warriors are playing that right there with their own pick, and it's a little scary for Warriors fans, I'll put it that way. It's good. It's not a top 10 pick, but it's a pick in a loaded draft that was going to help them or could help them. Let's say they have the 6 and the 21, and maybe 6 and 21 can get you to 4, you know, whatever. It's those kind of things that are part of this discussion. I just want to throw that in there.
Slater, you wrote about Draymond and his assists, and Draymond also, he took a player empowerment stance with his rant last night. All of this seems like signs to me that Draymond is fully engaged, he's fully back, he's finally healthy and in shape. Is this good for the Warriors that Draymond is talking and all that, you know, just in it? It kind of work against your plan, right, to save these picks.
It's better than about 36 hours ago when he was clutching his knee a minute on the ground. And you were like, is he out for the year? But, you know, it's this whole knee lockup situation that he has, which, by the way, is like very odd. I asked Steve Kerr if he'd ever heard of it. He said no. And we're talking about a guy who's been in basketball for however long. Yes, it's very good for the Warriors. I mean, the offense is still – he's having like this really – I put it in my article. He's having this really odd season that only Muggsy Bogues and Nate McMillan have done, where he's averaging fewer than 6 points and more than 7 assists. He has more assists than points, which he's never done. Like, we obviously know what type of player he is, but this is just – very different. And then this month has been he's basically doubling his assists. I mean, he's averaging almost 12 assists per game in February. There's many factors for it. Some matter more than others. Yes, he's feeling better. Steph Curry has led to so many of those assists for two reasons. Pretty much every time he sets up Steph Curry for a three, Steph Curry's hitting it right now. And then the slips to the basket that are completely Curry created. Draymond is almost always the passer on those situations, and all he has to do is just throw it over to a wide open cutter for a dunk. But then also, he's playing center, and that's, to me, like the larger point here. Like, the floor is very open for him. He is playing his best basketball of the season as the 5-man. Wiseman, who does not have his brace on his left wrist anymore, I think is coming back pretty soon. Looney's getting a reevaluation tomorrow. His ankle tweak wasn't super severe, so he's probably back pretty soon. Steve Kerr has said they will have big lineups. There's clearly times and matchups we know they need big lineups. James Wiseman needs to be developed, but they need to find center minutes for Draymond Green. That's, to me, what's, you know, shined mostly in February.
I don't think it's any coincidence that Steph's gone crazy without a center on the floor. I mean, I think he was playing well going into it, but it opens it up. It just allows it to be Draymond at the top and Steph go run around. You run over there, run over there, run over there, and Draymond's going to hit it you over there. There's just no other barriers to that. And guys are back cutting, screening, back cutting, screening, back cutting. I think you can't live long without a center in today's NBA, but the Warriors might disprove that. They've done it in 3-minute, 4-minute, 8-minute bursts in the dynasty years. Maybe they're going to do it for longer than that. It just seems to work. It's the Draymond Steph without a center thing that is that is what's opened this up. And it's Draymond being the quarterback, you know, absolutely take the ball. Marcus, you're taking the ball out of out of Steph's hands, though. Can you possibly support that? Is it Steph off the ball? No good?
Was it good in Brooklyn? Was it good against Brooklyn? It was not.
Well, Durant was jumping out on the switches. Not when they've got those guys jumping out like crazy. But it does work. You know, it's like the old Warriors. Like you try to run your old stuff against Andre and Kevin and Livingston and that kind of
or any good lane, defense. They just Utah, stopped it right? Like they know what's happening.
Yes, yes. This stuff is running against Cleveland and, you know, all Orlando and these teams that are just completely dead. There's a lot of them, but it didn't run against the Knicks too well, by the way. So, you know, we'll see. It's great. It's fun.
It didn't run against the Knicks, who's coached by a guy who used to kick it at Warriors practices when he didn't have a job, right?
Exactly. Ron Adams, a good friend. But I think that they're going to have to carve out minutes just because it sets Steph so loose and it lets Draymond just run. He's pointing things out. He's just like, you got to go over there, and then Steph's going to end up over there. Boom. That has to be maintained. It just, you know, may not be as long, as extended as we're seeing now. It won't be when the centers come back.
So, Slater, why doesn't this mean trade Wiseman?
What are you getting for James Wiseman would be my first question.
I mean, do you know unless you shop him?
First of all, you don't shop him you, unless a star becomes available. I don't think James Wiseman. This was a joking question.
I mean, I was joking, but there's a lot of people who are like, trade Wiseman, win now, right? Trade Wiseman, win now. And if you're watching them play well without a center, and Draymond and Steph are better without a center.
Are you trading him for like a seventh man who can, like, you know, do what JTA does, but a little bit better? And like, you're okay with trading like this golden asset that might down the road get you a Bradley Beal, or hey, might turn into a franchise center? No, you shouldn't do that. It's just like why they shouldn't have traded the second pick for Marcus Smart right before the draft, because I mean, would you trade James Wiseman for Marcus Smart right now, theoretically?
Absolutely not. I'm not trading James Wiseman, but
Marcus Smart is a very helpful playoff piece that would make the Warriors better in the playoffs this season, but you're not expending the Wiseman asset or the future of potentially having James Wiseman.
It's too much downside risk. I mean, that's the thing that people don't take into account is if you're Bob Myers and Wiseman becomes what you believe he will become and have said he'll become, I mean, you just wear that around your neck for like 2 decades. That's just too much downside risk. It could be the right decision. It could, to trade Wiseman for somebody who helps them right now. But the downside risk is immense, and you had better know that you're competing for a title in the way that the Cavs were competing for a title when they traded Wiggins way back in the day, rookie Wiggins, if you're going to do something like that, because it's just too risky.
It's not even just the downside risk of what if you trade Wiseman and he becomes an all-NBA center. It's also what could you have traded him for later that you used it on now, and then suddenly, you know, Giannis is like extremely unhappy and forcing his way out in, you know, a season and a half, but you just don't have the asset anymore. Also, the biggest question the rest of the season for me is like, when they do bring Wiseman back in, you know, they've talked about it. Steph's talked about him, you know, wanting to see Wiseman, you know, work into this fluid system. And Looney's talked about sitting on the bench and when, you know, JTA makes those slip cuts, when he gets even near Steph Curry and they double Curry, he's saying, hey, look, those slips are open for you too. You know, it's not just a small ball forward thing. Like James Wiseman, who will have a big on him, who will be told to jump out on Steph Curry, can do that. And he has a large catch radius and, as we've seen, a large dunk ability. So I think the first few weeks of Wiseman back will be interesting to see if they can do a lot of what they've still been doing with their fast, athletic future center of the future. And that's important.
I think fans are a little impatient with them, too.
Fans being impatient? Shocking. I just think if you're talking about how do the Warriors match up with the better teams, which they do not right now, there's a few different ways, but one of them they have on the roster is James Wiseman gets good. And that's how it happens. And he's younger than their core, so he extends the core. You know, we're talking about what Draymond is playing right now, but, you know, Draymond could go into a funk. He could get banged up. He's certainly not young, and you want to extend that. And that's with a guy like James Wiseman. I told a member of the executive staff last week, he's like a perfect pick right now for you guys. Not that he's perfect player. He's not that. But he's young, he's at a position you desperately need, and he plays differently than the rest of your guys. And we've all seen the Steph Draymond thing. It destroys, you know, mediocre to bad teams. It's can be effective against good teams. It can also be shut down. They got to play different, though. They got to have a different thing going on here with that, and in a way that they've had with David West, or they did, you know, whatever we can name the other ways that they've had that have been a little bit different. Wiseman's a little bit different, and he's 19, and he can put the ball in the basket, and he can possibly protect the rim. And I just don't see, like, you know, as you're saying, maybe not even a seventh man. You trade him for a fifth best player. I don't see where you get the value there. I think the value's in what he can fit down the road, how he can change them down the road. And just because he's hurt doesn't mean that we forget about him. I think it just means that you can imagine him trying to adapt in larger roles in a way that, you know, JTA can't do, in a way that Kevon Looney can't do. And I'm going to be the one who says, just keep him and hold on to him. And you don't trade him unless you're get a for sure superstar at the right position. And I don't see that trade being available.
You just gonna kill it like that, huh? Just man, kill it like, just gonna kill it like that. Kill it like that.
Yeah, brought it all down. Brought it all.
So I was going through some numbers, and Steph, if he keeps his current rate, the rate that he's at in February, is at like 6.4 threes per game over the last 44 games. He's on pace to make 420 threes.
In 72 games. Holy jeez.
He could sit two games. At this current pace of what he's in February, he could sit two games and make 402, which would match 2015-16.
Remember when we were talking about him making 400, and it was like, no way. He can't make that. What it was, 400? It was like, can you make 300? That was the question, because the record was, what, 278?
268, before yeah, that I think
season.
So, yeah.
It was like, can you make 300? Oh, yeah, I could probably make 300. Can you make 400? Oh, God.
I thought exactly that, where I was thinking, could he get to 400? Of course he can't get to 400. Like, I mean, I've said this before. But how realistic is this to continue? I mean, it literally is insane. He's shooting 55% from the field and 50% from three over, like, the last 13 games. I mean, it's kind of nuts. Is this Slater? I know you saw it. He something's up with his knee. He was limping. He was holding his left leg kind of behind it.
He had a Band-Aid on it.
I wonder if at some point they got to get him a rest.
I was about to say, the best Steph Curry stat for the Warriors this season is his games played. Yeah, he has not missed one game. Should they get him a rest?
Yes.
I mean, Cleveland was the game.
You should... No, it wasn't. That is the Super Bowl. You know, you need those wins. Well, the game was Brooklyn.
You can't do that.
Oh, that would be a great troll.
You can't do that.
Adam Silver would have called Ethan and said, "You cannot sit him, Ethan. You cannot sit him here."
Are we talking about correct strategy, though? Because correct strategy is you play an elite team who you're like Steph Curry can go for, you know, 40 and you might lose, and you sit him then if you think he needs a rest. Which, by the way, remember last week we're having this talk about like play him 40 minutes, so it's like kind of
we were not having that talk. Nobody's having that talk.
I don't want to do it again.
I was thinking you rest him against a team that you could win without him. That's what I was thinking.
Okay, but team is they that? Might have lost. Yeah, what if they lost last night? Like, okay, let's say Steph Curry doesn't play last night. Do you think they beat the Cavs? I don't know that they do.
They are kind of in a bind with it because whenever they play a good team, it's on TV. I mean, the NBA has really overloaded the schedule towards teams that get eyeballs. The Warriors are really one of the three teams, if not two teams, that does it. And I mean, the NBA is different from other sports. With the NFL, the difference between a game that's a real draw, you know, Cowboys, for instance, and name another regular team, it's there, but it's not pronounced. With the Warriors, I mean, you look at some of these cable ratings, it's like twice the audience when the Warriors are playing on TNT and ESPN than when, frankly, Milwaukee's been in some 700,000 viewership games, by the way, recently, which is, again, it's a niche topic. I'm fascinated by America's lack of fascination with Giannis, and it is it's extreme. I think the last couple games he's played on TNT or ESPN, it's in the 700,000s. Whenever it's the Warriors, it's going to be over a million. I mean, without exception. And depending on the opponent, it can get up to that 1.6, 1.7 range. So they don't really have these opportunities against a team they know they're going to get beat by where they can just kind of lay down and rest Steph, because then they're going to get fined by the league. So it's sort of like they've got to perhaps lose a winnable game to get him a rest.
Back-to-backs. I mean, you know, they got
the All-Star break's coming up. The All-Star break's not far away.
But he's in that. he's in that.
Yeah,
one.
He'll have to go, but it's not going to be nearly like, you know, the commitment that an All-Star weekend typically is. He's not going to play heavy, you know, high intensity minutes in the game. And then even after the game, I assume they won't play until at least Friday, right? But what will be interesting coming out of the break for teams is they're going to have to intake all these players who were just vacationing and test and then, you know, figure that out. So, and then the other thing is that, you know, one of these games might be canceled coming up. We don't, like, the Hornets right now are in complete COVID protocol because they played the Spurs, who just had four players test positive and have had three games canceled. Well, the Warriors have two games against the Hornets coming up, LaMelo Ball, Saturday. I don't even know if that game's going to be played at this point. So they might even get him some selective rest on accident at some point too. So at this point, with how much they need every win, and honestly, how good he looks, how in shape he looks, and the fact that he has sat some fourth quarters lately because they've had some blowouts and been blown out, I don't think they need to find a rest day for him.
They probably logically should, but he keeps playing like this. He's not going to want to sit. No way. I mean, he's going to want to keep this going.
This is what the 33 minutes is for, right? Like, this is why he's sitting.
Exactly. Yeah, but he's not going to say, you know what, let me sit.
He plays such a taxing style, and he is doing something all the time on offense. He is so important to what they are doing next season. I just think they should find him some more rest. I would be conservative with it. I just look at the amount of burden that is on him game after game, and I think, A, the 33 minutes is good, and B, you might want to just throw in some random rests there. That's just, none of us really know medically, but that's just my take on it.
I just think he's playing so well right now that if you keep the 34, 35, if you press it 38-minute limit, if he's playing like this, you let him keep playing. This is what he's going to want to do. And how many heads will blow up in the Bay Area if he's sitting out a game they lose? A winnable game, against Indiana, you know, on the back-to-back after they play at the Knicks, and Steph isn't playing that game and they lose that game. There would be some amount of anxiety over that one. Not that you judge anything based on that, but there would be. And yes, can he average, what was he, 6.6 a game now?
6.4.
6.4. Can he average that? Yes, he can average it, because he's gonna have 10 every fourth game apparently these days. So when you have the 10, 8, 2, 10, 6, 5, that's how you do it. The guy is on some kind of run here where he feels like he's going to make everyone he takes. Well, he feels it anyway, but he really feels it now. And these bad teams can't defend him. He's getting more open threes this season, by the way. Isn't it? Like, it's unbelievable some of these open threes he's getting.
They've done enough of this counteraction to get it on tape, to where defenses can't only think about him anymore. They have to think about, like, uh-oh, they might be using him as a decoy. And that, to me, has been getting him, like, I agree. I mean, obviously the attention is still heavy, but he's stepping into a lot more open threes than he was early in the season. When Kelly Oubre was hip-checking
when
him.
Kelly Oubre was guarding him.
To Ethan's point, I mean, Steph averages, he's 35th in the league at 33.7 minutes. But by virtue of games, he's 10th in total minutes at coming up on 1,000. So slightly behind Harrison Barnes and slightly ahead of Buddy Hield. So there is probably some space to get some minutes down. I mean, LeBron is 7th in minutes, which is nuts. It's insane. Julius Randle lead the league in minutes, by the way.
Thibodeau, that's his all-star. This is kind of wild. We're having this conversation a week after what we did last week.
I'm not with the baby and Steph. I'm just not with it. Like, he's the highest paid player on the team. He's in great shape. Like, he's fine. And if he gets hurt, he gets hurt. Like, that's the game. But if you run around trying to stop him from getting hurt, you'll never maximize him. So, like, yo, this is what the 33 minutes is for, period.
I think it's more important to get him help on the roster, frankly. That's where they can really help him.
Are you saying this season or in the long haul?
I'm saying this season, if they can do it, just it is, I think, too much. It doesn't seem sustainable to me. By the way, this kind of brings us back to the beginning of the what we were talking about. You look at the Warriors' profile in terms of rankings, they look like one of those Zebo-era Grizzlies teams with the 5th in defense, 20th in offense. It's very odd for a Steph Curry team to be that, but that is resultant from there just being almost no offensive creation outside of them.
Go look at what the actual defensive rating of those Zebo teams were in that era, right? I mean, I bet there was like 90, you know, they were probably defensive rating 98 and offensive rating 104. Well, now, you know, the Warriors have those similar rankings, but it's defensive rating 109. I don't know, offensive rating like 111 or something, which is not good. You're right. So, Ethan, what then would you say? Because they are pretty handcuffed roster-wise, and you don't want to expend assets, I assume, like future draft picks.
You don't want to deal the Minnesota pick. I think it's got to be, like we were saying before, it's got to be Oubre. And I haven't looked at what every team might have available for a guy who can create and maybe shoot. I like the George Hill idea. Somebody like that sounds good. I do think that they should at least take a serious look at that.
Any other Warriors topics or league-wide topics? There's some stuff going around.
Man, this league is wild.
Should we talk about whether Draymond was right about his rant? Is that something we should talk about?
Look, whether he's right or not, I just think, man, it's a rough time to be sympathizing with people who make so much money. Like, he picked a bad time to take that stance, just because do you think people care that, you know, Andre Drummond is feeling a little bit a certain way because he's getting $27 million to not play? Like, it was just a weird time, and you know, like, I don't know.
But it's just fun to hear Draymond rant, and it almost doesn't matter what he's saying. 1,000%. It's just the rhythm of it, the passion of it. Then when you start thinking about the actual topic, it's like, wait a second, Andre Drummond, $136 million career earnings. I don't know if I care. I don't know if I care about that. By the way, if it's wrong, that is between you and that's the NBA. It's a collectively bargained deal that you guys do. So if it's wrong, it's wrong. At the same time, it's just enjoyable to hear him rant.
A lot of it was about I felt like the rhetoric around.
Yes, yes.
It, and the way he's used the same point on the Marquise Chris situation in Phoenix, that it's always, hey, why can't this young guy figure it out? Is usually how it's framed, when his point is, why is it never, hey, why can't this organization figure it out? Although I would say Phoenix has taken its criticism over the years. But in general, I would agree that people say it's, you know, the media at times as a conglomerate seems to almost take the ownership down approach, you know, talk. I mean, what do you think about that point?
I mean, it's like, he's right in that in these situations, like, there is a bit of a double standard. But it's that way because we're all employees. Like, we all have to deal with it, right? So I don't know why, like, people are going to understand that this is how it works. If you look at the comments, everybody's like, duh, he's an employee. Like, this is how it goes. So I think the better way they can communicate this is that they're not employees, right? Is that they're partners with the NBA ownership and they get 50% of the revenue. But as long as, I mean, we all have to deal with employers, right? So I think people are always going to look at this situation from their perspective, which is, man, I couldn't get away with that. How come he gets to?
And these situations were all a little bit different. I mean, I don't know if these guys are getting killed necessarily. I think Harden was to a certain extent, but he's also partying with strippers, maskless, and showing up out of shape after the trade demand, and it comes off coming up short in the playoffs year after year. There's just a lot going into how everybody reacts to the situation, and I don't know if that situation has a whole lot to do with the Harrison Barnes situation, which might have more to do with timing and how these teams don't want to tell everybody everything because then they can't get something done. So I just don't know if all of these situations were the same thing, and I think it's a fair point that the organization informs a lot of how these guys end up doing and should be blamed for continual failures. But who's really going to bat for Robert Sarver and the Suns, right? Who's saying that all of their problems are the fault of the players that they drafted and they traded for? They're doing a little, you know, they're doing pretty well. I mean, I could say the Knicks, or I could throw out other examples. That does seem to be part of the conversation. I know it doesn't seem that way to Draymond, but I think it is.
He also sprinkled something in there that I think frustrates him, and that's the fine he got for speaking on Devin Booker's situation. The fine that Anthony
he should have been fined for that. Like that's silly.
Yeah, and I think that I think that informs a lot of what he was saying. It's like the NBA will punish him for saying that. The NBA will punish Anthony Davis for forcing his way out.
That's stupid. He can't be on the desk at Inside and feel like he has to just tiptoe around landmines like that.
And also, teams shouldn't be able to get away with leaking the information and then throwing their hands up like we ain't had nothing to do with that. Like, the report is, Andre Drummond is not going to play because we're going to trade him. And then the dude actually doesn't play. Like, where's the reports coming from? They should be held accountable for that. Technically, they are not allowed to talk about trades. Like, technically, teams are not allowed to do that. But they have the back door out of, that was the media, when it's very obvious that they're just, using the media to say it. So it's just a different mouthpiece, but there's no penalty for them. I think that's weak that they get to say, we didn't actually say anything about it. We just leaked all the information so it can get out there.
Like I said, I framed it as an important week for the Warriors. You have the Heat, which, sounds a lot more threatening than they've been lately. I believe they're 11-16 right now, which is kind of crazy. Then you have Magic, as we've seen, very beatable. Hornets, who will be off this week leading up into that game, which could make them rusty. And then Pacers and Knicks, or Knicks Pacers.
Is Wiseman going to be back for that Hornets game?
That's possible. I don't know. We'll know more in a few days. I agree. But they do play the Hornets again a week later, I think, or like maybe 10 days later, and he should at least be back for that one. Those five games, to me, if they are gaining the momentum we think they might be, as Marcus Thompson is suddenly throwing them in as a dark horse title contender, which was bold, then I think they need to go 4-1.
Dark horse Western Conference Finals contender? Can we go with that?
No. Because if they're that, then they're a title.
Nah.
I love Marcus's take on this. I don't agree.
I don't even agree. I'm just saying we just ruled it out arbitrarily. Like, I mean, not arbitrarily. We just ruled it out. And I'm wondering, hey, look at these other teams, man. They aren't impressing me that much. But go ahead. Sorry.
Should we have called the Miami Dolphins a Super Bowl contender when they were an average NFL team in the middle of the season? Just, I don't know. To me, they need to go 4-1 over this five games. They didn't need too strong. It's four road games. Pacers are tough. There's probably another loss in there. Heat are definitely not, that'll be a very, difficult game to end the homestand. But I don't know. I mean, like 3-2 is a must. You can't go 2-3 over this stretch. 4-1 is, I know internally what they're targeting. They need to get away from this whole never being more than two games over 500. Do you have a prediction?
Are they currently in the five-game stretch we haven't finished yet?
We were doing the four-game homestand that we were saying. I think everyone said 2-2, but they have a chance to go 3-1.
Nah, they gotta go 3-2 3-1 on the road trip. I think they gotta go 3-1 on the road trip.
Especially with home court advantages, doesn't matter as much, it seems. So it seems like it's a good opportunity. Ultimately, what's wanted. Hey, it shouldn't be taken for granted that they take care of business against these bad teams, but I think the fans demand a win or two against
a
good team.
Come on, they beat the Clippers.
That's what the fan base wants.
Yeah,
by the skin of their teeth. I mean, my God. Delivering a miracle.
Beat the Lakers. They got wins over the Clippers and Lakers and the vaunted
been a while.
Dallas Mavericks. They got two wins over winning records.
Problem is everybody is under 500, yeah. So it's like all these big wins. There's only like seven teams to select from.
Oh, Portland. Portland's the other one. Yeah, maybe Portland.
Oh yeah. Okay. There you go.
So yeah, that's the Dallas is under 500, so they've got a win over. Spurs are 16 and 11. My goodness,
Spurs are 16 and 11. They have two wins over the Spurs.
One, two,
which three, by the way, four, I've seen three Spurs games. They do not look good to me.
Unbelievable how they keep winning. I don't understand this at all.
I don't get it. To be five games over 500, I don't get it with that roster. How they looked against the Warriors. Dallas is interesting in how disappointing they've been, and I do wonder if there's going to be some sort of shakeup there if they don't make the playoffs. I think expectations does that. So, yeah. Anyway. Remains to be seen.
All right, I think we've done enough for done enough damage for today, caused enough controversy, got enough aggregation. What do you say?
You're going to get aggregated just with your optimism.
Yeah, my questioning of your pessimism is what I'm doing, which is what we do here at Warriors Plus Minus. Until next week, we will be over 500 as a podcast next week. Well over 500.
Boom. We'll be right back.